Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. A film by a Dakota artist tours her own digital art installation and the cultural and historical inspirations behind it. An all-Native production tells the story of a young Osage woman balancing her first semester of college with family struggles and obligations. And a documentary chronicles an Ojibwe band's fight against a pipeline project. We'll talk about three notable films today, coming up after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. On Monday, Apache Stronghold, a coalition of Apache people and their allies, asked all 29 judges on the U.S. Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals to review its case to protect Oak Flat in Arizona from a mining project. In March, the group received a blow in its efforts to protect the site after a panel of 11 judges on the court ruled 6-5 that the federal government can transfer Oak Flat to Resolution Copper. The group's trying to prevent the land transfer, saying the project violates religious freedom. Attorneys say Monday's appeal gives the full court one more chance to protect Oak Flat before the case goes to the Supreme Court. The area is sacred to Western Apache and other Native people. In a statement, Dr. Winsler Nosey, senior of Apache Stronghold, said, "Oak Flat is the heart and soul of the Apache, where generations come to connect with their creator and conduct ceremonies." In March, the court ruled the land transfer is not subject to federal laws protecting religious freedom. After that ruling, Resolution Copper welcomed it, saying the project will help supply copper to the U.S., create jobs, and boost Arizona's economy. The Ninth Circuit is expected to decide by the fall whether all 29 judges will rehear the case. Research shows that cultural tourism is on the rise in Indian Country because travelers crave authenticity and want deeper experiences with indigenous peoples. As KNBA's Rhonda McBride reports, Alaska tribes could be poised to take advantage of this trend.
Cultural tourism in Alaska can be as simple as a hike on a trail with a native storyteller or a visit to a dance festival. Although it's still in its infancy, Emily Edenshaw says cultural tourism holds a lot of promise for the whole state.
It's a sleeping giant. It's untapped.
Edenshaw is director of the Alaska Native Heritage Center, one of five Native groups across the nation to receive federal money to expand cultural tourism. She says it's an opportunity to rethink tourism in Alaska, which has come to rely too much on wildlife and scenery to draw tourists.
What about the indigenous experience? Our people have been here for 10,000 years.
The Heritage Center will receive about $50,000 to boost tourism. The money comes from the Bureau of Indian Affairs, which has partnered with the American Indian Alaska Native Travel Association to oversee the grants. The association's director, Sherry Rupert, says it's a good time to invest in indigenous tourism.
Visitation to our communities is increasing. That's why we're so interested in supporting efforts up in Alaska, because Alaska has the largest number of federally recognized tribes than any other state. There is so much potential there for these small communities.
Rupert says cultural tourism not only creates jobs and economic opportunity, but also helps tribes hold on to their heritage.
I think it really sparks a light and really sparks that pride in who they are.
Some of the other organizations to receive funding, the St. Regis Mohawk Tribe in New York, the Pine Ridge Area Chamber of Commerce in South Dakota, the Shonto Economic Development Corporation in Arizona, and the Native Hawaiian Hospitality Association in Honolulu. In Anchorage, I'm Rhonda McBride.
University of Utah women's basketball forward Alyssa Peely was picked by the Minnesota Lynx during Monday night's 2024 WNBA draft. From Anchorage, Alaska, she's Alaska Native and Samoan. She's had a large following from the Native community. After her draft pick, ESPN asked what it means to be representing her cultures.
A lot of Indigenous and Polynesian girls don't get to see that role model, and I'm just so blessed that I could be in the position to be that for them.
She was the number 8th overall pick in the 2024 draft. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support for law and justice-related programming provided by Hobbs, Strauss, Dean & Walker, LLP, a national law firm dedicated to promoting and defending tribal rights for over 40 years. More information available at HobbsStrauss.com. Support by the Gathering of Nations Powwow, a live event taking place April 25th, 26th, and 27th on the Powwow grounds of Expo New Mexico, featuring song, dance, trader's market, horse parade, and more. Tickets available at gatheringofnations.com and at the gates.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm your host, Sean Spruce. Two Native sisters venture out of their community to chase their dreams, only to run head-on into the threats of urban life in the new film, The Heart Stays. The new drama is produced by a Native multi-arts organization and features a Native cast, including Natalie Standing Cloud, John Proudstar, and Irene Bedard. Another film by Spirit Lake Dakota artist Marlena Miles is her own account of creating an installation of digital images throughout St. Paul, Minnesota, depicting the culture and history of local tribes. And Bad River documents a Wisconsin tribe's decades-long struggle with an aging oil pipeline through their reservation. Those are three new independent films out right now, and we'll be joined by those filmmakers today. You can join our show, share your insights about independent films, film projects, and documentaries. Just give us a call. The studio line is 1-800-996-2848. It's open now. We'll put your comments on the air, 1-800-996-2848. Let's meet our guest today. Joining us from New York City is Diane Freyer. She is the writer, director, and producer of The Heart Stays. She is Osage and Cherokee. Hello, Diane, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Sean. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure, Diane. Thank you for joining us. Also joining us today from St. Paul, Minnesota, we have Marlena Miles. Her new documentary is titled Realms of Resilience, and she is from Spirit Lake. She is an artist. Hello, Marlena, and welcome to the show as well.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
Pleasure to have you, Marlena. Diane, I'm going to go ahead and start with you today. Let's talk about The Heart Stays. I had a chance to watch the screener yesterday. I really enjoyed it. Tell us more about what was the inspiration for this story?
Well, I tell stories about the struggle for Native people to identify with traditional Native values within the context of modern society. And I felt called to tell a story, the story of The Heart Stays, for our families and our young people who struggle to identify with our traditions, so that we will all prevail.
Now, you're from Oklahoma originally. Is the film in any way autobiographical about your own life and your own family?
No, it's a story of fiction. Very wide. I cast a very wide net when I was writing it.
Well, one thing that I really liked about the film is the actors that you have. They're very relatable. They remind me of people that I know myself, friends and relatives. And some of the conversations are just, they're very organic, and it just has a real grassroots community feel to it. Any Native person can really relate to that storyline. Was that what you were going for, to make a film very relatable to Native audiences?
Yes, I make community-based film that it emerges up out of the community in every way possible. And, for example, I'm so honored and pleased that you love the cast, because I love them too. And I did not look to a casting director, the non-Native casting director. When I was doing the casting, I actually went straight to the community, started talking to the other artists, other community members that I knew, because I knew that would be seeing the characters through the same eyes that I was. And when you go through, you know, the more conventional way in the commercial film business, people are seeing them through a completely different set of eyes, which is, in most senses is not who we are. So that was really important, and I wanted to have a real mosaic. So we have your veteran Native actors, and then we have emerging, I call them starlets, the emerging little twinkles coming out, and then the some Native people with iconic status in National Native Arts were in there too as well.
Now, I noticed some of the scenery was there in Pawhuska, Oklahoma. How much of the film is filmed there in the Oklahoma area? And then how much of it is filmed back east? Because the main character, she travels back east. She goes to Dartmouth to go to college.
Right. Well, a little bit less, slightly less than half was done on Osage Nation. And that that feel that you get is because we didn't there were no dress sets. We just shot straight in the community. We went into people's homes, and to my relative's home, and we didn't. It has like a realness, a real sense of how things are. I think that especially Native people are going to recognize, and the people that don't know us are going to learn something new at the same time.
Well, I was really intrigued because there's just the plot is very complex. You've got this main character who goes off to go to school, and then she has a sister, and her sister kind of takes her own journey, and then her parents are very involved, and there's a lot of cultural elements. There's some tension. There's some conflict. What's the overall message that you're going for, Diane? And what do you want your audiences to really take home after they watch your film?
Gosh, there's so many things. I think I want them to take home this idea that this is a new kind of storytelling that's emerging from community. It's us defining who we are as people, who we are as a group, and have it be an inspiration for other Native artists to explore this way of doing things, that we have what we need in our own communities. That if we support one another, like I'm saying, we talked about the sets for just a minute ago, that we didn't go in and try to recreate a facsimile of something, that an idea of what something is went into the heart of the community and worked outward from there. And so I want them to have that authentic experience. And the specificity of the story is in the subtext, and that's what you're talking about, that helped to enrich it as well. For example, the idea that they're two sisters, you could have told it from a perspective that the younger one had to help the older one. There'd be nothing wrong with creating that kind of a plot line, but in Osage culture, the oldest child has a lot of responsibility, so it had to be the oldest child. As my husband has said, a family elder talked once about that means even if it is the oldest child is a woman, it can often be they're still the oldest child, and that responsibility can be even harder, more intense for them. And that, of course, defined the fact that this is a woman's story.
All right, Dan. Let's hear a clip from the film. Here, the main character, Shannon, who is played by Natalie Standing Cloud, is talking with her boyfriend, Randy, who's played by White Robertson.
Some school in the East.
Who told you?
You know there's no secrets around you.
I won a writing scholarship for one of my stories.
See, I told you. You were crying around about how hard you have it. I'm not that smart. Boo-hoo.
I really don't know if I can handle it.
And there you go again. Remember what I told you.
Watch down.
Try hard and do your best.
I really don't know if Dad will let me go. He thinks staying around here is really great.
It's no place I'd rather be.
You too? Is this a conspiracy? It's not like I'm never coming back.
You better.
I haven't even left yet, and everyone's going crazy.
So they want to know if you're leaving us, leaving the Riz.
What do you think?
Some people think they're bigger than this place.
Well, I'm not one of them.
Oh, Diane, I really like the relationship that Shannon and Randy have. And like I shared with you a little bit before we started the show, Randy, he reminds me so much of a friend of mine. He's just this kind of big, husky native guy, and he's really got his heart in the right place. So tell us more about the actor, White Robertson.
Well, that's a great example of what I brought up a while ago, that I looked in community for people. And actually, Natalie Standing Cloud is the one that took me, led the path for me to find White Robertson. Because I wanted, again, I wanted the native actors to come out of that community experience that's grounded in tradition, and that they would best understand the story and how to bring those characters to life. And when I met him, he was just, I knew I didn't have to look any further. What you're talking about that you brought up earlier, I think that he's easily recognizable in all of our communities.
Yeah, he really is. He's everybody's brother or nephew, cousin. And Natalie Standing Cloud, she was fantastic. Now, does she have more experience?
Well, at the time when we first started out, no, she didn't. And it was important to me to find some really talented people, and we would bring them forth. They would emerge in the story. That there's a lot of ta we go back to the same thing. We keep going back to community for me. That there's a lot of talent in our communities, and what we need is to get our stories done because that's where people see that talent. And so much of what's been written, the roles. Great roles have not been written for our people. So there's full character development. But here we see Natalie carrying a dramatic arc through an entire film, slightly over 2 hours. And yet she was hired by a non-native production company, and she didn't even speak. They didn't give her a line to speak.
Well, she had a lot of opportunities to deliver some great lines in your new film, Diane. We're going to take a short break and we'll be back. We'll talk more with Diane Frayer, and we're also going to talk with Marlena Miles about her new documentary titled Realms of Resilience. Stay with us, listeners. We'll be right back. This is Sean Spruce, host of Native America Calling. You can listen in every weekday to hear the only national call-in show from a Native American perspective. We explore topics that range from traditional cultural practices to up-to-the-minute news that affects every American. We hope you can join us for the next Native America Calling.
April is National Alcohol Awareness Month. Join a support crew to help yourself. If you have Medicare, Medicaid, or are insurance through the marketplace, you may have quality for treatment options. For more information, contact Indian Healthcare Provider or visit healthcare.gov or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Center of Medicare and Medicaid Service.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce. There are plenty of Native-centered films out there, especially lately. We're seeing a huge, huge trend in Native filmmaking right now, and many are made by smaller production companies. Today, we are focusing on three of those films, and we'd like you to call in, share your thoughts, share your comments, share your questions. What Native film or documentary have you enjoyed watching lately? Let us know. Phone lines are open, 1-800-996-2848. Our first guest, Diane Frayer, is the producer of The Heart Stays. It's a new documentary. And Diane, I know this film took you quite a while to put together, to produce and direct, a number of years. What were some of the challenges that you encountered, and why did it take so many years to finally get this film out to the audience?
Sadly, I think it's because there just weren't opportunities for Native people. They just haven't been there. So how it started was I knew that when the philanthropic establishment makes donations to nonprofit organizations, what they're doing is making an investment in economic development in underserved and marginalized communities. So we decided to start Amerinda, American Indian Artists, as a nonprofit, because that's the way, I said, that's the way we're going to get the money to do something. And then that will give us a platform to function from, which actually Amerinda is multi-art. But it was the very first beginnings of it was about creating an opportunity to be able to tell our stories. And for a long time, even then, the statistic was that in the philanthropic community, less than 0.1% of all philanthropic giving was going into Native communities on projects. And even in that statistic, an even smaller group were the actual Native people, Native-led and organized projects. It was going to institutions to projects about Native people. So that's what we were up against. And so the film has no equity financing. It was made entirely on grants I received, fellowships as an individual artist. And once I would receive something, I would have to convince the funder that we were not going to, they usually want you to do the project right away, for them to give us more time to do the project. So that we would get enough awards that we could go into production, and then we'd have to turn around and start that project again. But over a course of start doing things in that way again. But over a course of time, we kept getting it done, and So we shot out on Osage Nation, and also to my co-producer working with me, and the editor had reminded me that and had the great idea that also we wanted to get enough money to make sure we could get that completed, because only Natalie, the lead actress, and the lead supporting role, Sierra, would be the only two people we had to bring forth when we finished part of the story in the East. So we had to be conscious of those kind of things all the way through. But we had to throw out whatever conventional paradigms there were. We had to just cut loose of all of that and keep figuring out at each step how, as an underserved community, underrecognized, but we had great stories to tell, how were we going to figure out how to do this over a long period of time? And that brought us to where we are now.
Well, Diane, again, congratulations on this new film and just your perseverance for sticking with it and following it through to completion. We're going to bring Marlena into the conversation now in her new documentary, Realms of Resilience. Marlena, I had a chance to watch your documentary as well, and I really enjoyed some of the scenes. I'm pretty familiar with the Twin Cities and some of the walkways that were featured, as well as the Little Earth, the United Tribes housing area there where you grew up. Tell us more about your installations. They're featured in different parks and walkways, and they include augmented reality. And for our listeners who might not be familiar with that term, augmented reality, can you give us an idea of what people see while walking through these spaces?
Yeah. So augmented reality uses your phone technology, your phone's camera, the clays, artwork, animation, 3D models, audio. So when people visit, say, the Dakota Spirit Walk here at the Bruce Bento Nature Sanctuary, they meet four Dakota spirits, and each of those spirits impart wisdom or warnings or the history of the site, because it used to be a Dakota village called Kapoja, as well as having a sacred burial mound and sacred caves. So there's a lot of history that's intertwined within the geography. And so these stories, you know, they are being passed down through this augmented reality, through this use of technology, so people can hear our language. They can see our artwork before the arrival of Europeans. have a written language, and so all of our stories were oral traditions, and then we also used artwork to help augment those stories, so people would have illustrations that would help the storyteller be reminded of events, and we could also look at the natural landscape and see the stories that were embedded in the land. So this technology sort of intertwines our traditional ways of storytelling, as well as using phones that everybody has today to connect those stories.
Yeah, so it's really cool. So a person can walk through a park, for example, or one of these walkways with their phone, and they just aim it at some of these spaces, these wide open spaces, and then these figures, these graphics, and this narration, it all just pops up on their phone, and it completely enhances the experience. I mean, it's just, it's really, really cool. What got you into this, Marlena, this kind of, this type of technology in storytelling?
Yeah, I mean, I saw how popular Pokemon Go became. I don't play Pokemon, but I saw how people were just going all out of their way to go to places, and these Pokemon characters would show up using their phones, using that app, and they could capture them. And I saw how people were going places with their friends. They were telling their friends about it. They're showing pictures online where they were seeing these animations. And so I realized that this technology could be used to tell our stories, because a lot of the times our sacred places aren't places that we currently own anymore, with modern day land deed.
So Marlena, I'm sorry to interrupt, Marlena, but we're having a little bit of trouble with your audio. So I'm going to go ahead and I'll have our producers work with your audio, and then we'll come back to you. Okay, Marlena? So apologize for that. Just appreciate your patience. And Diane, I want to go back to you while we're waiting on Marlena's audio to get fixed. And Irene Bedard is in your film, and she definitely is one of those well-established Native actors who kind of helps anchor the whole cast. And what was it like working with Irene?
Well, first of all, it was a privilege, and I was so happy to have her there and be a part of it. As I mentioned earlier, I wanted a mix of a lot of things. I wanted our veteran Native actors who could also, you know, provide leadership to there, to the emerging people. And then I wanted talent that needed to be recognized to bring those folks out. And then I wanted to, as I said, found a space for like some of our iconic Native actors, artists, I would say. Muriel Miguel for Spider Woman Theater, and may rest in peace, William S. Yellowrobe Jr., who was maybe our most prolific playwright. We keep going back to community. It's reflecting who we are on so many levels.
I also like John Proudstar's performance as Natalie's father, or I should say Shannon's father. I'm sorry. He was like this kind of classic, kind of Native tough guy, really protective of his daughters, very much kind of ruled his home with a heavy hand. Tell us more about John.
Well, again, it was great to have that John, someone with John's level of talent and ability and experience there working with us. I was grateful for that. He really understood what I was trying to do with that character, that he wasn't just the problems that are in our communities. You know, oftentimes people turn to things to self-medicate, and really what they're covering up is part of what the story is about. Right, that these opportunities haven't been there for people, right? Mm-hmm. How to, as Native people lost their traditional life ways, as that, you know, it was, you know, government policies eliminated things like that from going on more and more. Why we find in communities and families people saying, well, how do I be that protector? How do I be that person? And his fears, we know when the way that we do this has been, a lot of that has been forcibly removed from us, but we still have these traditions. And that's why in the story that they find their way back to that healing tradition, you know, and they go to the Native American church meeting, because that's where healing can be found in, and where those things are there for us. We can rely on them to be there for us. And his anxiety, his reservations about what's going on were not, I would say he wasn't cynical. He was a realist.
Mm-hmm. Right, so, right. Yeah, just very concerned about his family, very concerned about his community. Thank you, Diane. Marlena, I'm going to come back to you now. I think we've got your audio squared away. And when we left off, you were talking about being somewhat inspired by Pokemon and some of these other types of technology that people watch on television and on YouTube. And tell us more a little bit about your journey with acquiring these digital skills as well as your artistic talent.
Yeah, growing up, my mom, she encouraged me to create digital art. She's always doing beadwork. Everyone in my family, the women, they always created beadwork, but I couldn't tie, like, even a knot on my thread, you know, so I don't think I had the skills for it, but she encouraged me to, you know, embrace what I was interested in, and that was using technology. And every year, technology gets better and better, and recently, you know, every phone can do augmented reality, and so I thought a way to make our stories easier to be accessible was using that technology. Like, before, I would make, like, 2D illustrations, and then I could talk about the story, but I thought if I'm not there, then the people who look at it, they don't hear the story, they don't learn all of the symbolism and things like that with, like, the different plants and the different spirits and the landscape. So this technology just lets me be able to do deeper levels of that storytelling so that people are educated, because that's why I like to create art, is to educate people mm-hmm. about our land so that they can, you know, respect the places that have our sacred sites. That even if it's like a modern city, you know, that history is all still layered here.
Absolutely. Marlena, let's hear a clip from the film and from your digital art installation.
Wakda, human. I am Gdehi, the protector of the waters. Look around. All these pejuta. These plants are medicine. They come from Jimaka. And if I see you misusing or mistreating them, I will bring my terror upon you. They are a gift to be cherished, just as the clean water. Learn to value them the same as you value the love of your family.
Protector of the water. Marlena, help us understand that audio clip. Where exactly would a person who's visiting your installation, where would they encounter that clip we just played? And what would they see as well on their phone?
Yeah, so when they go to the Dakota Spirit Walk, you're in this open field with ponds, and next to it are the bluffs that had that have the burial mounds on them. And you meet the first spirit, which is Unchi McCaw, Grandmother Earth. She teaches us to plant to our relatives, and we are walking in a sacred place. And then she teaches us that, you know, we all are part of the sacred hoop. And then we walk to the next stop, which is the water serpent Mtehi. And he is floating above the pond that people are restoring that landscape, because it was destroyed when they built the railroads. And people learn from their mistakes, and they're planting the native plants. They're making sure the waters are clean for the, you know, the frogs and everything that live there now. And so Mtehi, he basically speaks to us in a bit more threatening manner, I would say, to let us know that, you know, we will face consequences if we don't respect the way the plants are, the way the water needs to be cleaned, the way the air needs to be cleaned. So they see this mixture of an animal that looks like it has, like, elk horns, and it has sort of a cat body, a long neck, and it has spiky tails. This is a symbol that's been painted throughout different artworks for at least 10,000 years in this area. So we paint the Thunder Being, and then the water serpent, and the different tribes around here, they have their own words for those two spirits, but they've been always been part of our storytelling from the different tribes around this area. So that's the spirit they meet, and they see the fish swimming around him. They see these sort of water bubble spears to show, like, that water is always moving and that we need to protect it, and sort of like water is life as well, that teaching people that we really need to put that effort into cleaning the landscape, and when we do make mistakes, we need to fix those mistakes.
Marlena, while I was watching Realms of Resilience, it was a very therapeutic experience. There's a very easing music in the background, and then the images are just so beautiful. And the way you narrate it, you've just got such a smooth, calm delivery. It just really put me at ease and relaxed me. I just felt so good just enjoying that. It's about 30 minutes long, and it was just a very, very enjoyable experience. And was that also what you were going for, to create kind of a soothing, therapeutic experience for people?
Yeah, I mean, I think some people, they're apprehensive about watching Native documentaries because they think it's just going to be about struggles or traumas. And, you know, those are stories that need to be told. But for this, I want people to see the power of our artwork, that it can empower us and calm us, and that nature and this, I don't know, just building all these connections that hopefully people leave feeling empowered and using their own gifts to make the world better.
I think you really succeeded in that effort, Marlena. We're going to take another short break, and we'll be right back.
Support provided by Amerind. Amerind is 100% tribally owned and partners with tribes and their businesses to provide affordable commercial insurance coverage, protect tribal sovereignty, and strengthen Native American communities by helping to keep dollars in Indian country. Information about property, liability, commercial auto, and workers' comp available at Amerind.com. That's Amerind.com.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce, and we're talking about three independent films with strong Native subjects today, and there's still plenty of time to join our conversation. If you'd like to talk about any new Native films, film projects, or documentaries that you've enjoyed lately, give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. Our guest, Marlena Miles, is an artist, a digital artist. She is Spirit Lake Dakota. And Marlena, your installation that people can see in the Twin Cities and also in your film, do you have any plans to extend that to other parts of Dakota country, or perhaps even working with other tribes to help them share their stories using augmented reality?
Yeah, I mean, I'm working on a few projects right now. I'm working with Franconia Sculpture Park in Minnesota to create an augmented reality installation that brings in more community voices too. But I would be happy to meet with other tribal communities and even just be a mentor for their local storytellers and their local artists on how to create these stories. Because I think, you know, the only way for it to be really authentic is if it's people who know these connections, that know these stories best, to be telling them. And I have this education, and I'm totally happy with sharing it and working with different communities so that they can use this technology to bring in people of all different backgrounds to learn from the land.
Well, Marlena, thank you again for joining us today, and congratulations. Your new documentary, the title is Realms of Resilience, featuring art installations by Marlena Miles in the Twin Cities of Minnesota. Let's now bring in another guest to our conversation, Mary Mazzio, and she is one of the creators of a new documentary. It's titled Bad River. Mary is the producer, writer, and director. Hello, Mary, and welcome to Native America Calling.
Sean, how are you? Thanks so much for having us. Appreciate it.
You bet. I'm doing fantastic. Excited to talk more about Bad River. I got a chance to watch it. Was fully engrossed for it throughout the whole documentary. The Line 5 struggle, that's the heart of it. This oil pipeline that runs through the Bad River Reservation. What drove the decision to focus the documentary on that specific issue, Mary?
Well, actually, if you take a step out, Sean, we originally were going to focus really the entirety of the project on the Line 5 struggle. And we started conducting interviews with the elders in the community, and they were happy to talk about the current struggle, but they wanted to also talk about the mining resistance and what was the chapter before that and treaty rights during the Walleye Wars. And so the film actually took a dramatic left-hand turn when the elders began talking about their history. And it's really why the film became really a historical retrospective, if you will, of the Bad River Band's sort of genetic DNA of both resilience and defiance. And that was just an extraordinary thing that happened really organically and authentically when they could speak to what they did, what their parents did, what their great-grandparents did with a sense of pride. And that was a really exceptional sort of turning point, if you will, in the film itself.
Well, I noticed that those historical elements that lead up to this contemporary struggle with the Enbridge Energy Company. And Mary, what do you think most captures audiences' attention? Do you think it's kind of the buildup? Because there's even, you know, issues of boarding school trauma and colonialism. Or do you think it's, you know, the contemporary, this recent struggle with regards to the Line 5 pipeline?
Honestly, I think it's the sum is greater than the parts. And I say that because we're now heading into our sixth weekend. We opened theatrically on March 15th with AMC Theaters, and we opened in 12 cities. Because of such robust foot traffic, it ballooned up to 25 locations. We have been extended again in Ashland, now going into our sixth weekend. And that's just extraordinary, as you know, Sean, for a documentary, never mind lasting a week in multiplexes, but to last a full month is really amazing. And I think it's that historical context that is creating sort of such robust foot traffic, right? And I mean, it's we had a team around us to create such a piece of beautiful work. But at the end of the day, you know, whether it's told historically or the contemporary story, you've got a small tribal community that is fighting an epic battle with monumental effort at great personal cost to protect a resource, to protect Lake Superior, right? One of the planet's most precious resources, not just for themselves, but for all of us. And, you know, I heard the former chairman of the Bad River Band, Mike Wiggins, characterize the fight by saying, you know, what we're doing, this is the freshwater stronghold of America. What we're doing is part of our patriotic duty to this country. And I thought, wow, that's right. That's extraordinary. And I think at the end of the day, what's fueling foot traffic? Boy, it's hard to say, but it's at the end of the day, sort of a really inspirational piece that showcases this amazing history of resilience. And that's, I think people are really responding in ways, honestly, that we never could have imagined, quite honestly.
Well, I was just amazed to learn that in some of these smaller theaters, your box office numbers were beating like these big blockbuster films like Dune. Like, it was just, wow, like people are really going out in these communities to watch Bad River. Let's take a caller right now. Chanupa listening on Keeley Radio in Pine Ridge, South Dakota. Hello, Chanupa.
Hey, thank you for taking my call, Sean. And to that young lady that's speaking about, you know, her involvement with the industry of filming, I want to contribute something that is really detrimental to the reservation of Pine Ridge here. There was two documentaries that came out in the, you know, open parts of the 2000-year era. The first one was called The Battle for White Clay. And then the second one was Red Cry. And so both of these movies were orchestrated here on Pine Ridge, and they brought a bunch of understandings about what was going on on the current reservation situation. So these grandmothers of ours and myself helped them organize to get these films documented. Some of them passed, but the rest of us are still here. But they've always said this. That was the way that our elders told us to do things. And by taking part in these documentaries gives more of the exposure of what reservation life really is. And to that lady that's really doing the calculating, recording and stuff, I admire her involvement with it. And you too, Sean. You're always having some great topics, man. Wopilat to you, little brother. Okay, from Pine Ridge.
All right, Chanupa. Appreciate it, big brother. And let's go ahead and, for our listeners, let's find out where they can go and watch some of these films. So, Marlena, I want to start with you. How can our listeners see Realms of Resilience?
They can go to allartstv.com, and it's free to stream. It's also available on pbs.org. If you type in Realms of Resilience, you'll be able to find it there, too.
Okay, thank you, Marlena. Allartstv.com, that's where to go. And Diane, how about The Heart Stays? Where can listeners see that, your new film?
They can see it on Amazon, Apple TV, Comcast Xfinity, My Dish, Fandango Now, Google Play, Microsoft, Optimum, Verizon, YouTube, Spectrum, DirecTV, and Frontier TV. So it will probably be more than likely, if not likely, it'll be on everyone's favorite platform.
Okay, lots of options there. And Mary, I know a lot of theaters there in Wisconsin, up in the upper Midwest, but what about our listeners in New Mexico or Oklahoma or South Dakota or California? What's the best way for them to watch Bad River?
Thank you. And if your listeners, check out badriverfilm.com. We are partnering with Comcast NBC Universal. And the film will begin streaming on Xfinity, a Black Experience on Xfinity, and then it will roll on to Peacock later this year. So more details very soon, but all of this is at badriverfilm.com. And, of course, the film is still in theaters this week, and our theaters are also listed on badriverfilm.com.
All right, great. And we'll put links on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com, for more access to these films. And Mary, I was really excited to see that Quanah Chasing Horse was one of the narrators, along with Edward Norton for Bad River. And she's also an executive producer. What got her fired up about this topic?
I'll tell you, she's an amazing person. She is an environmentalist herself, of course, and really thoughtful about how she thinks about the ecosystem, not just the one that she grew up in, of course, in Alaska, but these issues sort of writ large. And she said to me something really profound. She said, Mary, this is such an extraordinary piece. And she said, of course, as a Native person, watching some of these stories, particularly of the elders over the years, it hurt my heart. But by the end of the film, my heart was healed and my soul was healed. And that was such a beautiful sentiment. And I'm so excited that Quanah participated. Her voiceover, of course, is beautiful and extraordinary. And I'm so grateful. All of us are so grateful to her. My co-producer, who hails from the Stockbridge Muncie Band, Allison Abner, who writes for Narcos and West Wing, really leaned in. We had Mata Wahui, who was the composer, of course, for Res Dogs, and he wrote some amazing tracks along with our composer, Shep Crawford. So we had just an outstanding group of people working on the material at the end of the day.
And Marlena, this complicated legal battle with regard to the pipeline, the Bad River Tribe fighting against Big Energy, the Enbridge company, without giving away any major spoilers here, what can viewers hope to learn about this issue and perhaps any resolution?
Are you asking that of Mary or Marlena?
I'm sorry, Mary. Yes, Mary.
thank you for that. I think at the end of the day, as a Bad River person said to me, he said, "You know what? We always stand up for what we believe in. We may not always win, but we're gonna bear the scars that we showed up to fight the fight. And I think at the end of the day, anyone can support the Bad River Band by going to defendthebadriver.org and to help the band as it continues its efforts to protect Lake Superior.
All right. Mary, we've got time to hear the trailer for Bad River. Let's cue it up.
The oppression, the racism just hit a pinnacle.
It was all built up.
You punk.
I thought Native people were going to get killed.
There's always some kind of threat.
They've had to fight to protect their land.
Seems improbable that a pipe would be hanging in midair.
That's a ticking time bomb.
When the meander reaches the pipeline,
apocalyptic.
It breaks, you know, this is gonna pour right into Lake Superior. And that's bad.
It is the grandmother of the Great Lakes. It is the freshwater stronghold of planet Earth.
Trying to shut down a pipeline, that's a major endeavor.
It's a David and Goliath type of situation, right?
You gotta stop it.
My little tribe is protecting water for the planet.
It'll be one hell of a fight.
This is a story of defiance.
We gotta protect our water to die for. We have to.
Mary, one of the elements that really impressed me about Bad River is you and your team interviewed a lot of people, a lot of Bad River community members who shared their perspectives. And what kind of feedback are you getting from those who participated in the documentary, as well as the extended Bad River community?
Let me, great question, Sean. And I'm indebted to this community, you know, particularly and acutely as a non-native. Right, showing to be invited in and to be embraced in just an extraordinary way. Here's, I think, how I can sum it up. There was a change in a leadership structure, and just before we launched on March 13, theatrically, I got a call from a tribal council member who said, "You know, Mary, there may be some of us that are new to the tribal council, but we are all Team Bad River. We would like to fan out on opening night to 6 of the 12 cities where Bad River is opening." And tribal members went and greeted moviegoers. Certainly in Ashland, which is 15 minutes away from the Bad River reservation, there are little five-year-olds that are going up to the theater manager and saying, "This is my favorite movie, and my grandfather's in it." And really what we're seeing is just this immense set, what we're hearing, in fact, is this immense well of pride and historical pride, pride of identity. And that is such a moving, it's, boy, what, how extraordinary is that?
Mm. Well, Mary, to you, to Kiwanis Chasing Horse, everyone else involved in the film, producers, directors, people who were interviewed, just congratulations, and appreciate all of your efforts to share this story. We're going to go ahead and wrap up our show now, folks. We are out of time. I want to thank our guests who joined us today, Marlena Miles, Mary Mazzio, and Diane Freyer. And the films that we discussed, Bad River, Realms of Resilience, and The Heart Stays. And we do have information and links on our website about those films for more information. We'll be back again tomorrow with another live conversation. Thanks again for listening to the one, the only Native America Calling. I'm Sean Spruce.
Support from Dartmouth College, hosting its first Tribal Leadership Academy August 4th to the 10th in New Hampshire. Up to 25 new or appointed tribal government leaders and a group of experienced presenters will consider intergovernmental relations, economic development, healthcare, natural resources, and tribal law and order. Dartmouth College will cover the travel and attendance costs. Application available at dartmouthtriballeadershipacademy.com. Application deadline is May 1st, 2024.
Huaca
April is National Alcohol Awareness Month. Join a support group to help yourself. If you have Medicaid or are insured through the marketplace, you may qualify for treatment options. For more information, contact your Indian healthcare provider or visit healthcare.gov or call 1-800-318-2596. A message from the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.